Quinn Kelly, Johnny Rourke, Brendan Connolly. This is the Sports Exchange on 95.9 WATD.
Hour number two here on the Sports Exchange. Let's get into a little Masters conversation. So while the tournament is still ongoing, the result seems nearly locked up. Cam Smith has fallen by the wayside. He is all the way down to just three over on the tournament in what has been a disastrous back nine. And Scottie Scheffler is just staying the course, excuse the pun. A huge birdie there at 14. walks into 15, last par five of the day, a chance to set up a five-stroke lead over Rory, who is in the clubhouse at seven under, trailing by four now. Unbelievable day from Rory. We'll talk a little bit about the guys that are near the top of the leaderboard here as this hour goes on. But I want to start with some guys that were not in contention this weekend. We'll get to Tiger. Obviously a huge story. Is this Masters music, Tim?
Of course it is.
He's been playing it behind every...
No, but it's different than...
Yeah, this is... I found a little different version. A little longer, a little softer, slower. Yeah. Isn't it nice?
Johnny, do you recognize this? Maybe I'm just...
This one is a deep track.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm as familiar with this one. All right, so Johnny, we'll get to Tiger too, because Tiger's obviously a huge piece of the story. We'll talk about him in a couple of moments, but I want to start with guys that were below the cut line this weekend. Three major names, Bryson, Brooks, and Spieth are the ones that jump off the page to me. I've got some thoughts on Spieth that I'll dial up in a moment here, but let's start with Bryson. We'll go in that order. Bryson, Brooks, Spieth. Bryson, Johnny, famously a couple years ago called the course a par 67. Finished, 13 over this week? Another poor Masters showing for him. It's mitigated to me a little bit by the fact that he was hurt coming into this, hadn't played much, was awful at Valero last week in the lead-up. But, again, he's, between the Saudi stuff and his continued struggles at the Masters, a guy that shouldn't be as unlikable as he has kind of become, he just doesn't do himself any favors. And he really wasn't a huge part of the story this week, but he got outplayed by, 51-year-old Sandy Lyle by a good margin. So, again, these continued struggles for Bryson at the Masters. Johnny, how much do we attribute this year to the injury, and how much is that he just clearly has not built his game for this course and maybe a little bit of the mystique of... You taunt the course, and the course is going to bite back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always going to be a factor. I certainly don't think his game is built for Augusta, but I'm going to give him a free pass this year. Like you said, he's hurt, clearly hurt. Hasn't played much, and when he has, he's been bad. So it's not a shocking result. When you see, when you see him post an 80 on Friday, that's kind of shocking. Just because at the end of the day, he's, a top professional golfer
right.
in the world, and then 80 is, very bad for them. So,
yeah.
That's obviously shocking, but I attribute it a lot to just, having a bad start to the year, hurt, he'll figure it out, but I'll be interested to see, the next 2-3 years, what kind of numbers he puts up at Augusta. Cause if he doesn't get that figured out, I think that's just going to turn into a bigger and bigger thing. And it's going to be a tough monkey to get off his back.
One other guy that's not in this mix, Johnny, that I did want to hit on, because you've got Scottie Scheffler, who's at the top of the leaderboard, is likely going to pick up his first major win here. You've got Victor Hovland, who's got a few career wins now and has been pretty solid and is kind of lower in that class. And you've got Colin Morikawa, obviously, who already has his two major victories. Missed cut for Matthew Wolf. And I feel like this is now a name that, isn't even familiar to a casual at this point, a guy that came in with so much hype and has just really fallen by the wayside. And just to, he probably doesn't belong in a conversation with the three other names that we were speaking of right now, Johnny. But just as you look over some of the guys who missed the cut, this to me was just another sign at the way that the class that kind of came in together has completely lapped Matthew Wolf. And I believe he's actually a year ahead of all those guys. But in this young grouping,
Wolf has fallen so far behind the pack, and the game's not where it needs to be right now, certainly, but another frustrating week for Matthew Wolf.
Yeah, it's funny. He was a guy that I noticed, you know, after looking at the leaderboard day one. I mean, you know, he was 9 over first day. He immediately took himself out of contention, and really contention to even make the cut unless he went really low on Friday, which he didn't. It's been interesting for him, you know, and I feel like he's a name you don't hear a lot from recently anymore, and there was so much hype, and you know, he won the, you know, I think like the 3M Open.
Right.
But when that's, you know, when that's one of your bigger wins, and you came in with, you know, the likes of Hovland, Morikawa, Scheffler, you know, those young guys, you know, that's just not going to get it done. So I'd be interested to see if he can figure it out, if he can, you know, get back to a form that was pretty good. But, you know, he's never been really up to the level of skill in my mind as, you know, Morikawa and Hovland. I think he has been the worst of those three. So I am intrigued long run if he just falls off or he can kind of get back to being a guy that can sometimes be in contention.
I know that there has been injuries have played some type of a factor in this, but very early in the career for him to be having the kind of falling off of his game that you will see as, you know, these guys that come in so hot, get so high, and then come down from that. Like, it's a little early from that. He's less than a year removed from being in a final pairing at a major, and he's just seems so, so far from that at this point. So just that's a quick note on Wolf. Let's slide over to Brooks Koepka. Johnny, another guy that has certainly had his injury problems. That's a factor in all of this, but a guy that came in saying he felt like he could contend this week. He's just a couple years removed from being right down to the wire there in the 19 Masters with you know, Tiger's victory. It seems like the days of the big game hunter Brooks Koepka, of the guy who is just going to come out and show out for the majors, are starting to work their way into the rearview mirror.
I think they are in the rearview mirror. I think they started to, you know, last year. You know, he had that crazy stretch, and I still think he's capable of doing big things in majors. He's a guy that you always got to watch out for, but it's not going to be as consistent as it once was. I think his name will pop up, but then he's going to miss a fair amount of cuts. I just feel like that's kind of where he's at now. That's where his game's at now. You know, missed a cut with two back-to-back 75s, and that's going to happen. But you know, right. To your point, there was a time where, if it was a major, you know, Brooks was going to be up there and he was going to be in contention and he was probably going to win it. But I don't think that's where we're at anymore.
He's a guy that I don't necessarily, and I shouldn't, I mean, he's well respected, but I almost think doesn't get enough respect just because of the path he took to get where he was. I mean, he is one of the more improbable, you know, major winners, really. A guy that has all the talent in the world, but when you think about where he was playing overseas and working his way onto the PGA Tour, and a guy who just didn't have a whole lot of hype early in his career, pretty impressive for him to have reached the heights that he did. And I don't, you know, it's no disrespect for him, but when you're a guy whose mantra is, I'm just not going to get up for any tournament outside of, you know, 4+ playoffs every year. Like he's collected his wins here and there, but just generally doesn't put a lot of stock in those lesser tournaments. It's kind of hard to find those opportunities to gauge where his game is at and to really feel like, okay, yeah, here's a guy who's ready to work himself back into major contention. If you just aren't taking those other tournaments seriously, and that's perhaps a little bit more harsh than is the reality of the situation, but if you are not in the same mentality week to week, if you are trying to flip on a switch of being the killer versus, you know, just kind of going out there and collecting a paycheck, that becomes very hard to do when your game's not where it needs to be. So I just think that for him to get back to the big game hunter Brooks, like, he's going to have to, you know, shoot some squirrels and bunnies, right? Like, he's going to have to start going out there and playing a little bit better in non-major tournaments, trying to get back into form and just, I don't want to say take it more seriously, but put himself in game mode week in, week out. All right, let's jump to Jordan Spieth. Johnny, I'll throw my take at you first and let you kind of come with this. But first miscut at Augusta for Jordan Spieth, a guy who, no matter where his game was at, I think back to 2018, when he was in the midst of some of the worst struggles that he's ever had, and he had a Sunday charge to finish top five in the Patrick Reed win. He has been at the lowest of lows in his golf game and still found a way to contend at the Masters. It's just been his course. This was a huge blow for me to, I guess if you want to call it the Jordan Spieth comeback, whatever it is. It's one thing for him to get a little wild with the driver, for his irons not to be, you know, as dialed in as the most. But he's coming off a week where, even as, you know, kind of poorly as he's been playing, he finished fourth in strokes gained tee to green at Valero last week, and then comes back this week, and it's been the putter that's let him down. He's always had a propensity to miss, you know, miss short ones. Even when he was at his best, those would be like weirdly sprinkled in throughout his round. But that
he's a robot. He's a robot, and something went wrong a few years ago because he was playing perfect golf, like about as perfect as you could ask for the first like 3-4 years of his career on the tour. And something happened with that mental breakdown he had. Was it the Masters? Which event was
it? Was the Masters? He had the collapse of the Masters, but he won another major after that.
He did, but he hasn't been the same since that collapse. Like it just feels like he has never recaptured that game that he had when he was first came out and burst onto the scene.
And listen, I my pushback on that would be that he has, you know, last year he had a stretch where he was playing better golf than anybody in the world for, you know, maybe a 2-month period. Got a win at Valero last year. Has figured it out for periods. But to me, he's not playing as bad of golf as we saw him playing in circa 2018, 2019, where he really looked lost. But to me, Johnny, watching him miss a cut at the Masters, watching him put two in the water at 12 again on Friday, and watching him double bogey 18 to miss the cut, I'm at a low point with Jordan Spieth. And there have been a lot of low points for him over the last 5 years, and I feel the worst about his game now because he's got a full-blown case of the yips. There looks like there is so much scar tissue, and Johnny, you can attest, I'm as big a Jordan Spieth fan as there is on this planet, but I struggle to watch his swing at this point. It is just, there is so much going on in his head, swing to swing, the crazy little practice swing that he takes before every swing now. Like, it's a little bit painful to watch, and even when it's going well, it's just not really pretty anymore. And then to add in the fact that he's standing over 3-foot putts and just you can see the gears turning, I think his game is at an extremely concerning point for somebody that feels like he hit rock bottom, built himself all the way back up to be a major contender again last year, and has just gotten lost along the way now is a little bit depressing for me to watch.
It's tough to watch. There's been that regression again since the bit of a comeback. You know, I think it's not like you said, he's not playing to the level of whatever that 2018-2019 travesty was that we had to subject ourselves to when watching Jordan Spieth play golf. But there has been a regression since last year. It almost felt like now, looking at it, a bit of a tease of, oh, is he back? And he was back for a little bit, but he's come back down to earth here this year, and I'll agree with you where, you know, the Masters was always that tournament where no matter how he was, you're like, he's going to make the cut, and maybe he'll even be in contention. But this week, he just didn't have it, and if he doesn't have it at the Masters, that's a bit of a red flag to me, just because what always keeps him in it is his ability to, you know, create shots and be creative. And he just didn't really have that, or, you know, he has that, but he makes so many little mistakes, and he's so in his own head when he's trying to do it that, you know, that's just going to overpower the creativity 10 times out of 10.
I'll say this, too. As you look ahead at the schedule, like, this is the thing. Again, like you said, if it's not at Augusta for Jordan, it's hard to picture where it's going to be. I really hate the rest of the majors for him prior to the Open. I mean, I think he's always a guy who's going to have a chance at St. Andrews just because it's more difficult there to take yourself out of play, to really get in serious trouble off the tee. So I think that is, you know, he can find a way. That's a place that he can be in the mix in. Don't like him out in Tulsa. don't really like him at the country club here in Brookline. So, you know, Kisner famously talks about how I look at the season ahead and say these are the places I can contend, and I know that maybe one out of four majors is realistically a possibility for me. Looking at it for this year for Jordan, you think that the Masters is always a possibility for him. Now that's off the table. I hate his odds in the next two majors, and you know, who knows where the game is at come the British Open later this season. So that to me is discouraging. He doesn't look like he's in a place where, you know, we have to kind of redefine what quote unquote back is for Jordan Spieth, because he had the best season of the last 15 years in 2015. Like, that can't be anybody's standard. He's never going to be that. Nobody's going to be that. Consistently, I should say, outside of Tiger Woods. But back for him at this point should be 1-2 wins a year, contending in a lot of tournaments, near the top of the FedEx standings. I just don't see that for him right now. I don't see how you could look at what happened this week. Yes, tournaments week to week can be a one-off, but there was so much discouraging elements of the game this week for him. I know it's a little bit of a tired thing to do, but he got married. He has a kid now. I'm not saying that, you know, anybody should begrudge him that, or anybody should get angry if that is what's at the crux of the issue for him, that there is a distraction off the course that's hurting what's going on the course. I think that there is something, though, that you can look at that and say, all right, well, now you're a guy who's, you know, slowly but approaching your 30s. You've settled into a domestic life. I'm sure there's a learning curve with that. So I wouldn't write him off, but clearly he needs to just figure out whatever's going on upstairs, if there's a distraction that's causing the play, or if it really is just scar tissue that's built up from on-course stuff. You got to find a way to break through that. And I guess, you know, he's a guy who has done it once and could maybe do it again, but kind of a scary spot for him. All right, let's jump over to Tiger, Johnny. I'll start with this. Are you happy with Tiger's performance this week?
I mean, I'm happy that he completed 72 holes and seems physically okay. So I'm happy about that. Not happy about how he played in the last two rounds.
I think that it was kind of telling what the issues were for him come Saturday, Sunday, or at least Saturday. The putter just failed him. And to me, you know, he wasn't hitting great shots around the course at times, but even when he was struggling on the greens, and that to me just reeks of fatigue. And I think that the most telling thing, honestly, Johnny, was watching him. They flashed him walking off by the clubhouse and greeting his family, and it was a pronounced limp at that point. I think that he kind of bit his lip through a lot of the weekend, put on a brave face. I think that maybe what we saw from him on Thursday, Friday, led us to kind of underestimate just how much of a physical toll this whole ordeal was on him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you think about it like this, too. I know we talked about this on Thursday, but he's only walked, like, he played a couple 9-hole rounds. Right. And then just to rip four straight walking 18s is a lot.
Had a tough place to walk.
Yeah, like, it's a lot, and it took its toll. And credit to him for grinding it out, you know, and not withdrawing and just kind of fighting through that, because I'm sure he's in a lot of pain. It was funny, I think it might have been after yesterday's round, or it might have been Friday's, where the interviewer asked him how he felt, and he laughed. Yes. And was like, you know, I would have loved to feel a lot better. Like, he was not feeling good, and he was in a lot of pain. So that definitely, I like your fatigue putter take as well there, because that's going to, you know, show up on the greens.
Yeah.
You've just walked a 500-yard par four. You look up, you're like, you can't really squat to read your putt, and you're tired, and you're thinking about the next 15 holes that you need to walk,
right.
And then you just miss the putt. So it is tough. We'll see where he goes from here. But, hey, I mean, he finished a golf tournament after he shattered his legs in a near-fatal car accident. So
yeah,
at the end of the day, you can't be too upset at that.
And I don't think anybody's understating it, right? It just really is hard to imagine, like, how difficult that was, and really appreciate how crazy it is that he was able to do what he did. There are two kind of other Tiger notes I want to hit on, Johnny. One, another kind of quote that he had mid-tournament, I think it was going into the weekend, was somebody asked him, like, listen, Tiger, we know that your metric of what victory is binary. It's win or lose. You don't come to tournaments to not win them. But do you consider making the cut a win? And his response was, absolutely I do, which is, you know, a stark departure from Tiger of the past, but I think a new reality for an aging Tiger who has had, you know, a serious injury again. I absolutely do consider it a win. If you had seen, like, there are some people from the tour that saw where my leg was at in the wake of the accident. If everybody had seen that, you'd understand why I'm so appreciative just to have been able to get out here and to play even these 36 and how incredible I feel about making it to the weekend. So I think that piece of it is huge, that there's this mentality change, and I would say that then bleeds into Kara Banks of Sky Sports, who got an exclusive with him after the round today and said...
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
He said, I'm going to play the Open at St. Andrews this summer. He's not sure about the PGA Championship at Southern Hills, but he's going to try. I think that what gets lost a little bit in all of this, Johnny, and I know that he's a guy that, you know, his detractors will point to different things in his personal life that have not been, I don't know, the best. But he is so important to the game of golf. We've talked about it on this show. You know, what he does to bring in the casual fan, how much buzz he creates. It was so very visible at Augusta this weekend. There is, to me, an incredible selflessness to what he's doing right now, in that I don't think that he was necessarily physically ready to do what he did this weekend. That I think that if all things were equal and he didn't feel a responsibility to the game of golf, to the PGA Tour, to golf fans, if he could just say, do I really feel ready to go out there and put my body through this? I think the answer probably would have been no. And I think that there's a certain selflessness that he's aware of what he does to add to a tournament. And I think in a perfect way this week that he wasn't the distraction that I thought could have been possible, in that, like, he didn't necessarily dominate coverage. It didn't overshadow the great golf that was being played by others around him. He was a strict net positive to this tournament. He was a huge addition. His making the weekend was an incredible storyline. And the fact that he did that and gutted it out, and again, I think that walk after, you know, after the round today was so telling, because he was laboring so, so much. This was clearly a huge undertaking for him. And the fact that he did that, and really without even taking time to assess where his body is at in the days and weeks following this tournament, to already say, oh, no question about it, I'll see you at St. Andrews, and I'm probably going to see you at Southern Hills. Like, to me, it speaks to what an incredible ambassador to the game he is now continuing to be, and in a different way now as he's entering his later 40s.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a cross that he's had to bear for a while now, and I think he gets it. You know, on that walk after the round today, he was, you know, smiling, right? He knows how long of a journey it's been to get back, what he's been through, you know, understands. I mean, even you talk to, like, other players on tour. Like, there's a quote from Rahm, who he played with today. He was like, yeah, nobody cared about me, so I could just kind of play golf and watch Tiger. Bryson stayed the weekend and was walking, watching Tiger today.
It's pretty incredible.
Like, he means so much to the sport, and he knows that. And, you know, credit to him for gutting it out. I actually, curious what you think about this. I think if it's any other major, he didn't play, he wouldn't have played.
100%
like, if this was the Open right now, this weekend, I think he pushes it back. But I think especially since it was the Masters, he was like, okay, I have to play in that. Just even, you know, like you said, he, you know, the PGA Tour needs him. You know, everyone needs him. Augusta needs him, too. And he's had so many memories there, and the Champions Dinner and everything like that. I think if it's a different tournament, he might push it back. But it is. It was great to see him this weekend. And, you know, like you said, love that he was immediately like, nope, I'll be back this year, and here's what I'm going to do.
I heard CBS forgot to ask him if he was going to be playing when they had the first interview. Right.
Oh, really?
That. Yeah. So
that's funny. That's a miss. Somebody, somebody's getting an earful from production.
Yeah, that, well, at least somebody tweeted that. Boston Radio Watch. That's a fun account to follow.
And honestly, I mean, not to be. I think it's great that he had that exclusive and was asked that question and gave that answer. But it might have been a conscientious decision by CBS to say, like, let's live in the moment. Let's appreciate the incredible thing that he just did. And if he plays, he plays. But that's, you know, in his own time to decide. So, which is not knocking Kara Banks for asking the question. I'm glad somebody did, because that's such an exciting update, even though there is a notable omission from that, and that would be the U.S. Open at Brookline, which would be really fantastic if he could find a way to play.
That, I mean, hey, I think there would be a couple of talk show hosts who would like to see that potentially.
Yes, no question. But, yeah, I'm glad somebody answered it, but I think, you know, that could have been a tactful decision to not by, you know, on CBS's part. But in any case, that's kind of our recap for the non-contenders. I'm sure there's more to talk about, more that we have not gotten to on that front. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to start getting into the contenders. We'll start with some of the guys a little bit below the leader on the board right now, but Scottie Scheffler in the tee box at 17 with a 5-stroke lead. He can go double bogey and take home a green jacket, his first of his career. Incredible story going on right now at Augusta. We'll touch on all of the contenders and your soon-to-be champion, Scottie Scheffler, when we return.
Quinn Kelly, Johnny Rourke, Brendan Connolly. This is the Sports Exchange on 95.9 WATD.
It, it looks like Scheffler's now 12 under.
Yeah, quick correction to that. Scheffler, with two holes to play, is 12 under. In some trouble on 17. Johnny, I had eyes off it. He went well right on his tee shot. Is in some trouble here on 17, but does have a 5-stroke lead. Let me be the first, and, you know, I'm a stand-up guy here. Let me offer my apologies. Shouldn't have called him the soon-to-be champion just yet. There's work to be done for Scottie Scheffler. So I'm retracting the potential broadcaster kibosh that I may or may not have put on him. Just going to get out ahead of that.
Take retraction.
He could be the Masters champion. Right now, he's just the Masters leader. All right. I want to start with the guy that's in second right now and his partner today, Rory McIlroy, with a blazing 8-under 64 today, moves into solo second, a position that he seems likely to retain. Colin Morikawa with a solid 5-under round today as well to work himself up into a tie for fourth. Pretty incredible round, and it didn't look like there was a group that had more fun on the course today. Now, easy to have fun when you're playing that well, but for Rory McIlroy, a guy who was, you know, trying to find his way into the top 10 and wound up all the way up at number 2, being the last guy to really give Scottie Scheffler any type of heat, absolutely incredible. The finish, both those guys chip in. From
the same bunker,
yeah,
which was crazy. What's wild is that highlight will probably get a lot of play tomorrow. McIlroy's chip in from the bunker, basically. Morikawa basically had a similar putt or chip shot. It was just about 5 feet closer. It's not going to get any clicks whatsoever tomorrow. Everyone's going to be talking about McIlroy's shot.
Yeah, well, McIlroy's is slightly more consequential in that bad bunker shot there. He makes a bogey. He slides back into a tie for Smith, and he probably finishes third. That put him in a position where at the time he's 3 back of Scheffler. He's given him a little bit of a run and has solo second. But either way, let's talk for a quick moment here, Johnny. I'm sure you've seen it. For as much as I love Rory and as incredible as that moment was, not sure what he was going for there with the separation. It was like almost a jazz hands, almost like walk like an Egyptian. I don't know what that was.
Oh, I saw that. The little celebration.
Yeah,
at
that
the
was
end.
A little... I don't know what that was from our guy Rory, Johnny.
Yeah, I don't know. He's going to want that one back. But
the only bogey he had on the course today.
In the heat of the moment, you know, that happens. But it's funny. And obviously, like, when Speed chipped in to win the Travelers, obviously a bigger shot, but the chest bump with the caddy was great. And then Rory comes out with this like half club throw, half like sprinkler dance move. It was so strange, but hey, I mean, they were having fun. It was almost like those two were like drinking. They might have sneaky been having some alcohol, because they were just having, they were playing free.
The cart came
fun.
Two or three times versus yeah. once.
They were an absolute joy to watch. Johnny, we talked about this. Absolutely incredible now. 7 of the last 9 trips to the Masters for Rory McIlroy have resulted in a top 10 finish. And still, Moby Dick is out in the water for him, and he cannot chase it down. It is still his white whale. He has not found a way to win, but has been all around it for the last 9 years.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see that develop, because, you know, you look at Phil Mickelson, who in the U.S. Open has come in second 6 times and hasn't been able to capture that elusive tournament. So, you know, does it continue for Rory? Does he have that breakout year? This year is obviously a little bit different, where, you know, he wasn't in contention at all, just had a really good final round. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, he plays well, likes the course. So that's the only thing, you know, the difference there between him and Phil, where Phil's, you know, the U.S. Open is at a different course every year. There's going to be some overlap, but it's different, where if Rory really wants, he can, you know, try to hone in on Augusta and really just focus on that, and he knows what he has to do, and, you know, it's every year there. So I think he wins it at some point, but, yeah, it's something to keep an eye on.
So that's interesting. I was going to ask that. Another guy that's in this kind of contention category who didn't have quite as good a day today is Justin Thomas. He's been a popular pick for a long time now. And he's also a few years behind Rory, but aging into that group where it's, you know, it's growing from, you know, just a kind of a footnote into almost a monkey that is on his back. A guy that you would expect, I mean, his game suits Augusta. You would expect that he gets it done at some point in the same way that you would expect Rory McIlroy. I'm interested to see whether or not these two guys are able to get it done, but they're starting to wade into the point in their career where it's developing into a little bit more of a bugaboo. So, in any case, not as good of a round today from JT, but a lot of fun from Rory McIlroy. Johnny, I said when we talked about this on the main event on Thursday that my concerns after day one from Cam Smith, had he not double bogeyed 18 on Thursday, that he was going to build up a lead that was going to allow for him to potentially go wire to wire. Obviously, Sung Jae-im finished at 5 under that day, so he would have only been a stroke back. But Cam Smith continued to play good golf. It's been a struggle today for him, though.
It has. It's been an up-and-down week. You know, he came out, he played really well for the first 17 holes on Thursday. Friday, he didn't play too great. And then yesterday, he did play well. Today, yeah, it was almost like the moment was a little bit too big, especially on the back nine when he had to make a charge. He went the opposite way, you know, kept dropping down that leaderboard. It's figured out a little bit since, but just not the day that Cam Smith had in mind.
It's interesting because he sets that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Johnny, but first guy to ever have all 4 rounds in the 60s, that was in the DJ Masters, right? That was 2020 when DJ set the lowest scored a par record in that same tournament, correct?
I believe so.
So a guy that has shown that for 4 rounds he can go through Augusta without letting his foot off the gas pedal, but at the same time, that DJ had that one pretty firmly in control after Friday, and, you know, obviously the incredible weekend for him put it away. But Cam Smith wasn't kind of in that same position, where here he was today, yes, 3 strokes back, but after 2 holes he was a stroke back. And all of a sudden, it was, okay, Cam Smith could absolutely take home this Masters. And as you said, it did seem like the moment became too big for him. But I'll give you my take on it, Johnny, is I really feel like it was Scottie Scheffler who made the moment too big for Cam Smith. I think that I go to hole number 3, and it will 100% be the shot of the tournament for Scottie Scheffler. His chip in after a wayward tee shot when he is only leading by a stroke now. Cam Smith ends up in a decent position, not a great position, but in a better position. It looks like it's going to be very hard
for Scheffler after his second shot to make par at that hole, a very real chance that he could drop a shot. Cam Smith doesn't have a great approach either. They're in the exact same spot. Scottie Scheffler, when it just looks like the wheels might come off the wagon a little bit for him, and he could
recovers.
Let Smith. He recovers. He chips in. He puts all the pressure on Cam Smith, who then goes and makes a bogey, and all of a sudden it goes from a one-stroke separation right back to a three-stroke separation. And then at different points throughout the round, right, Scottie Scheffler has his bogey, I believe, on 10, and then goes to 11 and has himself a lengthy par putt. He drills it in Cam Smith's eyeball. Cam Smith goes to 12, discouraged that he's not able to pick up any ground there, and puts it in the drink. It felt like at every turn, not to make another bad pun here, but it was a masterclass in defensive golf from Scottie Scheffler today. Thank you.
You said it right there, though, because it feels like Scheffler, whenever the wheels have started to come off in some form on a hole, he's been able to recover in the same hole.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Smith, it seems like the problem has kind of compounded itself over a 2 to 3 hole stretch, and then he kind of starts battling back. By then, it's too late. So it looks like Scheffler's probably going to hold on here, up 5 strokes with a hole to go.
Through 17, excuse me.
Unless he shoots a 15 here on the last hole.
Yeah.
He pulls a Brendan.
So it does look like it is going to be his. But again, Johnny, I feel like Cam Smith's struggles today were born out of frustrations that at every turn where it felt like he had an opportunity to really make a charge, Scotty closed the door on him.
No, I think you're right in saying that, and, you know, in credit to Scotty there, because, you know, I think it speaks to how calm and composed he is as a player and as a person in general. Because, you know, you come in with a pretty good lead into the weekend. You do what you have to do yesterday, but that lead shrinks a little bit. And then all of a sudden it's one stroke lead with 16 holes to play. You're in a bad spot. You got to step up and hit a shot. He does that. And you're right. Every time Cam Smith was right there to make a little bit of a run, Scotty said not so fast and was able to basically push him off. So that's what he had to do. We knew that was what was going to happen this weekend. If he was going to win, he just had to play golf where, you know, play your game and don't let the wheels fall off. And he actually has, I think, done more than that, where he's had to hit some big shots, but he has stepped up for those.
I think that it was going to be hard to outdo what he had already done this weekend when he went low on, you know, Friday while others were not able to get anything going. Similarly, on Saturday, had a stretch where he was just burning through it, looking infallible. Obviously, came back to the pack a little bit as the round wore on Saturday. It seemed like it was going to be very hard to outdo, but his performance today, 3 under on the day, and not going to be the best round of the day, but an incredible round given the circumstances, especially to be standing on 3, looking at an extremely difficult chip, trying to save par with a guy who has just closed the lead down to 1, breathing down your neck. I mean, what he has done today is one of the great final rounds at Augusta, in my opinion. I think an incredible, incredible showing from him. I'm interested, Johnny, as they come up the 18th now, did you feel like there were any other big winners this weekend, guys that are not in the winner's circle, or any other guys that were just kind of in that contention pool that we didn't hit on, that you felt like had a weekend to build off of here at Augusta?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. You look at the leaderboard, and like, not a lot of people played well. Mm-hmm. I think the course, you know, did a good job of living up to the hype. But, I mean, Morikawa, I think, you know, can build off of it. Zalatoris is a guy who I'm still not really sure on, but
yeah,
he finds himself right now sitting tied for 6. Like, he's looking at a top 10. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think he can build off of this a lot. You know, and even just guys like, you go further down, like Harry Higgs just finished, you know, tied for 14th at the Masters. He's a guy that's really improving. Max Homa made the cut for the first time, then laid an absolute egg this weekend.
Yeah.
But still, you know, that's something for him to build on, get that monkey off of his back. So definitely some big winners, you know, in this tournament. Joaquin Niemann had a lot of good going on early.
Yeah.
And finished 77-74, which is kind of tough to see, all the way down to 35th. But still, he was able to play with Tiger Woods at the Masters and shoot a, you know, 69 first round. So that's a pretty big achievement for him.
I think, again, too, and you mentioned it, it was a difficult weekend there. The weather made sure of that. Today was one of the, if not the best weather day of the whole weekend. And you saw that, I think, reflected in a good deal of guys going a lot lower than they had at any point. I mean, an absolutely crazy 8-under from Rory McIlroy. But in the end, only 9 guys who finish under par for the tournament. I think that puts in perspective even more how absolutely crazy a 12-under from Scottie Scheffler is.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even, you know, yesterday and today, you're like, oh, has he played his best golf? No. But he still, I mean, he shot, you know, 1-under yesterday and you know, had to battle on the back nine and has had to battle some tough weather. So while everyone else is faltering, he's just taking a deep breath and been able to stay the course. Actually, a guy that I also want to call out is Shane Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we hadn't heard from him in a while.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he just, you know, came out and he's what, you know, tied for third right now with a he shot a 69 today. So 2 rounds in the 60s for him, able to get a top 5 finish. That's huge for a guy like him who had, you know, seemed to come back down from that open win a couple years ago.
He's going to be the 5th golfer to be the number 1 ranked golfer in the world to win the event.
Pretty incredible. And that's another quick point, too, is we'll just hit before the back nine. Johnny, I talked about this, I believe, actually maybe not with you yesterday, but was having this conversation. The whole narrative that people are, you know, like frustrated that Scottie Scheffler went from having no wins to in 6 weeks becoming world number 1 is just baffling to me. Because it's not like it's a subjective ranking. Like he gets points for his results in these things. It's a computer-based thing. Like he is the number 1 player in the world. It's not a, it's a living ranking, right? Right now there is nobody playing better golf. And in a week where leading up to this tournament, I don't think he was, you know, I don't know if he was, he wasn't the favorite to come out and win.
I don't
this
think
tournament.
He's ever been the favorite. He's just been consistently near the top of the rankings in each of these tournaments recently.
Right.
And when you do that, you accumulate a lot of points really, really fast.
Right. And just went out and I think proved those rankings absolutely right. All right. Let's hit a break because we got the back nine to roll through here in a minute. Went a little long, so it'll be a quick back nine to close this one up. But we'll be right back after this.